The Farming Programme with Arroquip Steel Stockholders, Withambrook Industrial Estate Grantham. For all your steel needs, call their friendly experts.
This week we're looking at a soil sensor that tells us when it's time to spray.
It's really hard to detect with your bare eye, and therefore when you do spraying, whether growth pesticides, fungicides, growth regulators, you can really harm your crops. And in that terms, this gives you the benefit of looking in the soil.
The Pig and Poultry Fair is back, as is the Louth Lions tractor run, and Sean's talking weed control.
We've got soil temperatures that have increased by over 10 degrees in the last 2 weeks alone. Then the weeds are going to motor and emerge at a similarly rapid pace.
And we'll hear the thoughts of NFU Deputy President David Exwood on their latest farmer confidence survey. Spoiler alert, we're not very confident, that is.
The Week in Agriculture. This is the Farming Programme with Steve Orchard.
After a warm, sunny week, the return of the rain. We'll check the forecast at the end of the programme after we look at the markets. This is the Farming Programme podcast for Sunday, the 12th of May, 2024. Hello, hope you've had a good week. I'm Steve Orchard. In the news this week, the government's announced that the seasonal worker visa route has been extended to 2029. Some £60 million worth of crops were lost in 2022 due to labour shortages. 43,000 visas will be available to the horticulture sector in 2025 and another 2,000 for poultry. The announcement's been made in response to the Shropshire Independent Review into labour shortages, and up to £50 million of additional funding is on the way for new technology for automated packhouses. The announcements have been welcomed by the NFU and the CLA. The UK's first police officer specialising in livestock theft has been appointed as part of a new rural crime initiative codenamed Operation Foldyard. It's an area of crime that's cost farmers £2.7 million. The officer is Martin Beck, who has 30 years' experience of policing rural areas, and the new role involves gathering livestock theft-related intelligence across the UK, sharing that information with local forces to help build cases and secure convictions. Ocado and the Soil Association have teamed up to show nature-friendly farming at five UK farms, each focusing on different areas of farming, dairy, beef and sheep, to orchard fruit and potatoes. Each host farm will produce training sessions for other farmers, sharing technical expertise and support on nature and climate-friendly farming practices. And the results of the latest NFU Farmer Confidence Survey are in. Perhaps not surprisingly, we're not very happy, to say the least. Let's talk about the results and what they mean and what's to be done with NFU Deputy President David Exwood. David, are things really that bad?
So the key takeaway from the survey is that confidence in farmers is at an all-time low. We've been doing this survey for many, many years, and it's never been so low. It was conducted in November, December, so you could argue that if it was done particularly probably March, April, it would be even worse. But look, the reality is the confidence is low, investments is low, confidence in making a profit is really low. So it's not just that confidence is low, it's low looking forward as well. And ultimately, it's very clear that will lead to less production, less food being produced, and that does matter.
When you say low, where are we in comparative terms? I mean, if we did this, say, 5 years ago, how much of a drop are we seeing in confidence?
So we're about a 20% drop. So it's right across every sector, everywhere in the country, and everybody is, you know, significant chunks of the industry are feeling really low, and almost nobody's feeling optimistic. I think that's the other half of it. You know, normally you'll get, obviously, you'll get differences between sectors, you'll get differences between areas, you'll get differences between farmers. Everybody is feeling the same. I think that's the point. It's sector-wide, it's industry-wide, it's country-wide. You know, it's quite an extraordinary coming together, which just reflects what we all know. We've got this perfect storm at the moment of weather, policy, volatility of prices. Everything is looking difficult, and it's all come just at this point of real huge policy change. You can't quite believe that everything's come together as it has, but that's what happens, isn't it?
And that's, as you say, the perfect storm, isn't it? But
yep.
Things like the weather, you know, the weather, we moan about it, but it happens every year and there's absolutely nothing we can do about it. But a lot of this seems to be down to policy, and things that are being driven from on high are adversely affecting the whole of farming. Would you say that, rather than the natural side of things?
Absolutely. It is about the combination events. But the key thing is that the phase out of BPS coming before they've got the new schemes really fully up and running. Yes, you know, SFI is available. 20,000 people have gone into it. That's great. But there's 60,000 that haven't. So we are experiencing a phase out of the old policy. The new policy isn't really up and running fully yet. And it's come just in the middle of this perfect storm of weather and volatility in prices. The main thing is, we're quite clear, it's causing a cash flow crisis in the industry. And that it probably is the key. You know, you talk about policy, but it actually comes down to money. Every farmer can think about, you know, yes, they're down to 50% this year, but they lost 30% last year, whatever. You know, the cumulative effect of the phase out of BPS is causing a cash flow crisis in the industry. And that is what's really hurting on top of everything else.
And it seems to me that this is only going to get worse unless something dramatic happens or there's a massive change of policy. We're going to be in the same position, if not worse, this time next year.
Well, look, the sun's come out, the ground's sort of dried up, things are growing, it's warm, you know, it all looks better, doesn't it? But that only masks the reality of what's going on. I think this is a temporary problem. Look, there's a range of new SFI options being announced in the next coming week or so. The policy will get going and it will deliver more money to farmers, but it's not enough of an answer. And I think this really is a temporary problem. But of course, you can't invest in the future. You can't become more sustainable. You can't. It's hard to move forward if you're really strapped for cash. You know, you can have all the grant schemes in the world. If you've got no money, they mean nothing. So actually, there is a temporary problem this year of cash flow caused by everything we've talked about. So it's really about getting people through the next year or two, giving the new schemes a chance to kick in and work and be accessible by all and delivering money out. And so we see primarily this is a temporary problem and it needs a fairly immediate solution to address what's going on now to enable farmers to get through to the challenges that will never be there in a 2 years' time. But that's the first thing.
What would you like to see then as that immediate solution?
So we've talked before, and when we said again, we actually think that there should be a pause in the phase out of BPS, not actually cutting BPS again this year would be the right thing to do. I have to be clear that there is no political will to maintain direct payments or even to pause that BPS phase out. But look, that doesn't mean to say that isn't the right thing to do. And I think we're quite clear in our view on that. Beyond that, we think that there should be, you know, the government, they've got this 400 million underspend in the DEFRA budget because they've phased out the BPS money and they haven't been able to get it out the door in other schemes. We're saying that should be available to the farming industry now. They need it. They've got to find a way to get it out the door. Happy to discuss how you get that out the door and what that might be. But look at the flood recovery fund. It was relevant to some parts of Lincolnshire. Many other areas just completely irrelevant, didn't touch anybody, and yet they're probably just as affected. So we need a widespread scheme that actually helps farmers and makes a difference in the coming months, not jam tomorrow.
Talking of jam tomorrow, at some stage in the next 7 or 8 months, there will be an election. Now, not going to get political at all, but what would the NFU like to see from whoever takes over at number 10 come the election?
So we want to, first thing is we've got to talk about the DEFRA budget. We think there should be more money in it with all the ambitions they've got for the environment. We understand that, but they need to have ambition for food security, food production too. So we think that a modest increase in the DEFRA budget will go a long way to delivering that. We think that's absolutely key. And then it's the length of the budget as well. Farming can't operate on sort of Westminster short-term cycles. We need duration of budget. We had commitment to funding for the length of this parliament. Now, it's worth pointing out that commitment ends when the election is called. So whatever that commitment to spend was disappears. And so we're looking for a new commitment and really a new commitment for a long period as well, so that farming, which is a long-term game, can invest in the future, have confidence in the schemes for the future. So budget amount, budget length, and then just really a series of measures that really give confidence to farmers to keep producing food, because SFI and Elms, look, it's fine as far as it goes, but it is primarily an environmental measure. And what we really feel we need is measures that actually support food production. Because our worry is that the food production will just quietly drop and drop and drop until, you know, we really do have a crisis. So we want some specific measures that build confidence, support food production alongside supporting environment. So biodiversity, clean water, clean air. Yes, we get all that, but food too.
Now, I'm sure the NFU has engaged with all the major political parties. Have you actually managed to get any commitment out of anybody?
So I think the only solid commitment is the Lib Dems, who've talked about another billion on the DEFRA budget. But of course, you know, that perhaps is a commitment made from a position of relative comfort, if I could put it that way. No, we haven't. But we will be, you know, when we get into the election, we will be talking very clearly about, you know, what the different parties will offer, what they will do for food production alongside the environment, what specific commitments there are on a whole range of issues. And that will be for the election campaign when it's called, when it comes. We will have that debate and see what commitments the different parties make.
I'm sure you'll be ready. And let's just hope that when we have this conversation in a year's time, confidence is not at an all-time low. David, thank you so much for joining us on the Farming Programme this morning.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
Two sectors of farming which have been hit hard over the past few years are pigs and poultry. With disease, shortages of abattoirs and dramatic reductions in herds and flocks, there will hopefully, though, be more positivity this week with the return of the Pig and Poultry Fair to the NEC. From the organisers, Alice Bell's here to tell us more about what's going on. Alice.
So the Pig and Poultry Fair is very much about looking forwards. So it's an opportunity to bring producers and the wider supply chain together to discuss the opportunities and the challenges that are ahead of us. So we have over 330 exhibitors at the fair who will all be bringing their latest new products and services, all to help producers drive their businesses forwards to be more sustainable in the future. It's a great opportunity for everyone to come together and to talk and to share ideas. There are challenges ahead of us, but by talking about those and planning for them allows us to be more successful in the future. The positives for the sector are the fact that consumers like to eat pork and eggs and poultry, and there are plenty of opportunities. We will have some speakers from further up the supply chain, from some of the retailers and the processors who are very close to the consumers, and they'll be sharing their challenges and opportunities ahead to help us understand as producers how we can be working more closely together and where we're heading as sectors. All three of them have very different challenges. There are some significant disease challenges at the moment. So at the fair, we'll be talking about contingency planning in the event of African swine fever. There are various sessions talking about improving biosecurity, dealing with avian influenza, etc. So very much it's about coming together and sharing ideas.
Yes, a lot of innovation. You have not just loads of exhibitors to walk around and chat to, but forums and theatres. Is this what you're referring to when you say you've got speakers?
Yes, absolutely. So we have three technical forums at the fair. We have the pig forum, the poultry forum, and a new innovation forum. So those theatres are free to attend. Across those theatres, we have 63 speakers and over 45 sessions. So you can hear from about everything from insect farming to the latest monitoring systems to how do we inspire Generation Z to eat more pork. So there's a real breadth of subject area and also speakers. So a lot of well-known producers, industry bodies will be on those platforms, including kicking off with the farming minister, Mark Spencer, on the first morning.
So, yeah, plenty of opportunities to learn stuff and plenty of opportunities with the exhibitors and with others to actually ask questions, not just go along and pick up a free pen or two and some brochures, but to actually talk to people about what your issues may be.
Yes, we know that the most valuable thing about the Pig and Poultry Fair is that coming together and talking to people. I spoke to a very well-known farmer at the last fair, and he said, I come to the Pig and Poultry Fair because it's that bit of information that I don't know that I'm going to find. It could be a forum, a conversation I have, but if I'm not here, I'm not going to find it. And it's about sharing ideas and finding some inspiration. There might be something you hadn't thought you needed to know, but you come across it at the fair and that helps to solve a problem back on farm.
And plenty of new products to talk about at the fair as well.
Yes, a huge variety of new products as well. So we have over 63 new products that will be at the fair. And it's a great opportunity to see those and discuss them face to face, because these days we don't actually come together very often all together. So to be actually able to see and talk and touch around new products is a great opportunity.
Yeah, talking of that getting together bit, there is, as with all of these farming shows and fairs, a social opportunity, isn't there? A chance to get to see people you might not see very often.
Yes, absolutely. It's a very friendly event. Everybody really enjoys the opportunity to come together and catch up and share ideas and share the challenges as well. So yeah, it's a really, really nice feeling event and a good opportunity to come together, even at the Pig and Poultry Fair in 2022, when all three sectors were really struggling. I was very anxious that nobody would want to come to the Pig and Poultry Fair, but it was really nice to see the industry come together and also support each other in these challenging times.
And a bit of an opportunity to talk about sustainability as well.
Oh, sustainability runs through pretty much everything we're talking about at the fair. As a sector going forwards, we need to be sustainable. We need to look after the environment. But sustainability also makes business sense as well. So we know it's what our consumers are wanting. It's just that sometimes the interpretation of sustainability can vary significantly. But that's the only way forwards, really, is to be more sustainable. Looking after the health and welfare of our animals, and protecting the environment. Those are key aspects that run through everything that is being talked about at the fair.
I think sustainability is one of these peculiar things that it's almost become a bit of a buzzword, hasn't it? But realistically, every farmer forever has had to focus on sustainability. Otherwise, they wouldn't have a farm for very long.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. It's the balance, as always, between welfare, sustainainability. And at the end of the day, we have to be profitable because, you know, farmers can't be green if they're in the red. It's as simple as that.
Couldn't have put it better myself. Just finally then, Alice, where do we go for tickets and more information?
Okay, so Pig and Poultry Fair takes place next Wednesday, the 15th, and Thursday, the 16th of May. It's at the NEC in Birmingham. You can register for your free ticket in advance via our website, or you can do that when you arrive on the day.
And that website, if I'm correct, is pigandpoultry.org.uk.
Yes, absolutely. That is correct.
Lovely. Alice, thank you so much for joining us on the farming programme this morning. Have a great show.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
I should point out there will be no live animals at the show, but do let me know if you happen to be going on Wednesday. I'll get the coffees in. Crops, weeds and aphids, the focus now, with some timely agronomy advice from our crop doctor, Sean Sparling. Morning, Sean.
Yes, morning, Steve. Starting with sugar beet then. Sugar beet appreciated that rain last weekend, by the way. Quite variable amounts, though. I took 15 mil at home, 4 mil round Lincoln, 9 mil round Gainsborough. But fair to say that with temperatures now up there in the low 20s and that warm wind of this week, we're already getting ready for the next 10 to 15 mil. Sugar beet through the ground within 7 days of drilling and beyond cotyledon and first true leaf within 3 weeks of drilling in many cases now. Of course, when you get rapidly warming soils and a drop of rain, and don't forget we've got soil temperatures that have increased by over 10 degrees in the last 2 weeks alone, then the weeds are going to motor and emerge at a similarly rapid pace. Polygonums and dicots then up and away now. But to get successful weed control in sugar beet, much of that depends upon three things. Firstly, the size of the weeds. Small weeds much easier to control, much more reliably controlled at the cotyledon small plant stage. So once weeds such as knotgrass, black bindweed, fat end, ivy leaf speedwell, pelpus, acaria, groundsel, cranesbill. Once they stick their first true leaf out, they become much harder to kill. Secondly, the size of the beet itself, and that's going to govern the rates and the combinations of the products that you're going to use. In other words, how daring you dare be. And thirdly, the weather and the soil conditions that are about when you need to go spraying. Because as we all know, the nature of sugar beet weed control is built around low dose, low volume applications. Low dose of product in a low volume of water. And experience has taught us that a fine quality spray is going to give by far the best results on small weeds. We also know by default that air induction nozzles, bubble jets, are never a good idea when it comes to applying sugar beet herbicide. The droplets are just too big, and that's when we see this mottling on the weeds as they start to shrug off the herbicide and grow away. So make sure you've got the right nozzles in, that you know the growth stage of your sugar beet, and therefore how heavy-handed you dare be with the addition of things like surfactants, and of course the safety of the higher doses of product that you're going to use to enhance the effect of the brew on the weeds when you do go. So the strength and content of any tank mix, particularly in these stressy, dry, warm conditions and periods of rapid growth, just needs to be tailored to the sugar beet growth stage and the conditions that you're spraying in. Watch these intervals as well between applications. Read the label, because these minimum interval restrictions are there to protect your sugar beet from you. Thresholds of one Mises persicum imp per four plants quite easily being met and exceeded across untreated fields around Lincoln, Newark, Boston areas this week. And if your crop is at threshold, then threshold is threshold. The small plant size does not matter. There's no ambiguity here. If you're finding one green wingless aphid per four plants across the field, you must react to that. We know that the early virus-carrying aphids lead to the greatest virus damage in the field, so you need to trust these thresholds and adhere to the best advice on spraying. So to be absolutely clear, if it is definite that your threshold has been reached, then the best advice is to spray. Starting early, of course, leads to the worry that our options for spraying are going to run out in 4 or 5 weeks' time. We're still waiting, of course, for confirmation of approval for a second application of acetamiprid on these non-cruiser treated plants. So potentially these small peri-emergent sugar beet plants that need spraying now could mean that one acetamiprid and one flunicamid may not be enough to protect them through to the 12 leaf stage when these plants' inbuilt resistance kicks in. Because even though they're translocated down into the new growth as the plant sort of grows on, they could just become too diluted too rapidly as these plants grow into small plants. But BBRO will keep us updated on that situation as it develops. And remember the sequence of sprays for these non-cruiser treated crops as well. And we're only talking about non-treated crops here. It's acetamiprid to be applied first, then flunicamid, but you have to start with the application of the acetamiprid once those thresholds are reached and exceeded. Sugar beet dressed with cruiser should be covered for about 10 weeks or so from the date of emergence. I'm also finding leather jacket and pygmy beetle damage fairly widespread, slug activity as well out in the heavy land in particular quite noticeable, particularly in the non-inversion systems after cover crops. Significant levels of skylark damage as well, where they're pinching off those cotyledons, which this warm weather is going to help. It'll let these small plants grow away from that fairly quickly. And also finding quite a bit of flea beetle activity widespread too. Thankfully at the moment, the flea beetle doing a pretty good job of wiping out the volunteer rape, which seems to me to be my major problem weed in the sugar beet. Oilseed rape now, much higher risk of sclerotinia than it's been up until things warmed up last weekend, a bit too cold up until then. But now coating these petals with a layer of protection to stop these grey moulds and the botrytis from setting in when the petals drop and stick to these wet stems, absolutely crucial. Azoxystrobin, boscalid, prothioconazole, bixafen, very good option, and they should protect your canopy for about 3 weeks, so that should take you through to the end of the season. Winter wheat shifting as well in these warm conditions. I said last week, you know, there's going to be plenty of people where the correct timing for T1 got missed because of the weather this spring, so leaf 3 may well already have active septoria on it, and that means that the T2 fungicide is going to need to be applied as well as you possibly can in a week or two's time, just to make sure the flag leaf is well enough protected from any latent disease within the canopy, and it's a bad disease season by the look of it. Leaf 2 and indeed flag leaves already starting to prick out, believe it or not, in a place or two. And because the T1 was so suboptimal, plans should be in place now. That'll be a very good idea to get those plans in place now, but we'll talk more about that next week. Winter barley's pushing the ear out as well, so tea timing's looming in the winter barley. Awn's very important part of the process in barley, so focus on protecting them. Don't spray so that you scorch them, and protect that lower canopy. It's the lower leaves which are more important to yield than the upper leaves in winter barley. Growth regulators as well, largely too late once the awns emerge. So for most growth regulators, you're too late in winter barley. So make sure you check those labels if you've still got some to put on. We'll talk about that too next week. Spring barley that was drilled mid-March now getting its T1. Late tillering, growth stage 30, widespread in though. The stuff that went in later, that varies from yet to come through the ground to early tillering, so way off T1 yet in those. But the speed of growth will be absolutely dramatic in those later drillings, so do make sure there's plenty of nitrogen in there for them. Manganese, magnesium, zinc deficiencies widespread and easy to find too, particularly on the lighter soil, so be ahead of that manganese problem in particular. If you can see deficiency, you're already a bit too late. So strap in, let's see what the next 7 days bring.
Thank you, Sean. See you next week. Now, how do you know when the ground is ready for spraying? A new piece of kit may help boost the years of experience. We'll hear about that along with the markets coming up next on the Farming Programme podcast.
The Farming Programme with Araquip Steel Stockholders, Withambrook Industrial Estate Grantham, supplying the region for over 40 years.
So when is the ground ready for spraying? And how do you know? A new piece of kit that's been successful in Europe is now available in the UK. Welcome Mick Plack from Estonian firm Pooltech to explain how it all works. First, Mick, a bit of background. Who are Pooltech?
We were launched in 2019 in Estonia. The hardware part we're using has been scientifically researched by my father, Tiet, for more than 40 years. And the methodology of this hardware has been created by my grandfather, Paul, hence the name of the company. So there's actually a story behind this. And then my wife put this 1+1 together because she came from an agricultural background and we had the first child. We were living with my father for a little bit. And then in that terms, it was a really like a family business that we're running here. So all in all, we are not just like a bunch of people who wanted to do something and then created this, but we had the technology and we have the insights from agriculture. So this is a bit of background.
Soil is obviously key to all farmers' work, but particularly arable farmers. Quite often soil testing is done maybe once a year. It's sometimes the farmer will use their experience to look at the soil and have an idea what's going on with it. You've actually got some technology to do this maybe more accurately. So tell us a little bit about the soil sensor. How does it work?
Well, the soil sensor, it is not as accurate as a soil sampling, of course, just to be fair. It is based on electrical parameters that we already, some people are using some kinds of methodology, but it's not only based on EC, which is electrical conductivity. So because the conductivity itself is very dependent on water. But we have removed the dependency. So in that terms, the technology measures multiple electronical parameters at the same time, and therefore we can give this generalized nutrient number of this of the soil. So this means that we are measuring data every 2 hours. We have we call it the soil station because this relates to people as kind of most people compare it to weather station, but it's measuring more stuff from the soil. There's a soil station, which is one station in one field. It has two sensors attached to it. It has a solar panel, a battery, and a SIM card in it, so it can be placed anywhere. You don't need any power or any internet. And while it has two sensors, then we measure the data from two different depths usually. So one is 5 to 8 centimeters and the other one is 20 to 30 centimeters, but it can be chosen by the client, let's say. And in that terms, it takes measurements every 2 hours and then sends the data to our database. And we can see from there is the temperatures in real time. Let's say 2 hours is the one we call real time because dynamics in our regular fields do not move that often or change, sorry. And then there's the temperatures, we get the water content, and then we get the generalized nutrient number from the soil.
And that enables you or the software to say to a farmer, now is a good time to spray, or now is not a good time to spray, or now is a good time to add nutrients or fertilizer.
Exactly. This is, if we come back to the first bit, is about the nutrient number. As we say, this is a generalized number, but we can assess it back. What is the most common fertilizer you start your season with? It's nitrogen, mostly. Let's say 90-95% what let's say regular arable farming uses nitrogen, as well as in special crops, let's say salads, onions, potatoes, whatever. And in that terms, the real-time measurement gives you this benefit that you know that you have applied fertilizer, and you see that is it granule or is it liquid? It's gone from the surface, it's gone into the soil, but has it become available to the plants? And this is what gives you the insight that actually, even in UK, we saw this spring that it takes 2 to 4 weeks before the bigger amount of this. Of course, the plants can use some of it in the top layer, but in the 5 to 8 centimeter range where the root is, most of it will be accessible from there and the nutrients will become available. There's actually a pretty big gap in this application versus the dissolvement of the nutrients in the soil. So yeah.
And you say this machine's got a SIM card in it, so it can send a signal to the farmer's mobile to say such and such a field is ready.
Exactly. So this is what the system does. So it sends the data to our database where it's analyzed the raw data and it's presented in our web application, also a mobile app, and you get notifications. You get these automated recommendations. So this is the thing that how the company itself has developed. So initially we had just numbers and graphs, but as this layer of data that we're giving now, people have not used this kind before. So if you're talking about the weather station, you know, it's precipitation, it's wind, etc. You kind of know the resemblance, but what we are giving is totally new. And in that terms, we saw that people are having difficulties understanding this data. And so we have tried to simplify it. And now the system itself is talking to the farmers. So we give this one-liner automated recommendation that, let's say, just for example, that the fertilizer is dissolving in the field, it's becoming available to plants, the fertilizer is running low. Let's say we can compare the data from spring till the current status. Then you can see about the spraying conditions that, okay, we can look spraying conditions above the soil, but actually there's a stress situation in 8 centimeters, which really hard to detect with your bare eye. And therefore, when you do spraying, whether growth pesticides, fungicides, growth regulators, you can really harm your crops. And in that terms, this gives you the benefit of looking in the soil.
On a practical basis, do you need one of these for every field, or is it portable? Can you sort of pick it up and then take it to another field and test again?
Our initial focus is that it would stay in one field, and then usually farmers, dependent on what size they have, different areas, maybe different soil types, different cultures. So in that terms, we usually focus on, let's say, 3 to 10 stations would be sufficient, or dependent on the size of the farmer, of course. And in that terms, it gives you the different locations. So we don't actually see that you need to have one in every field, because you can make generalized decisions based on certain areas. And about the portability you asked, is the thing that we have been working with Cheese Fresh Group in southern part of in Chichester. There was this Piotr guy who was agronomist there. He has used a lot of different sensors in his time. They're growing salads there, and he found it that it's really easy to deinstall and install, because in salads you have three seasons, or your three crops that you harvest and then you do another one. So he had to remove it himself and install it back, and he found it very easy. You don't have to call anybody up. It's really easy to do. So in that terms, this is a big benefit as well.
Okay. Now, you've been testing this in the UK, but it's actually available in Europe. How successful is it in Europe?
We are seeing really, really good results in Estonia, Finland, in Sweden, in Åland, and in a lot of different crops. So as you said in the beginning, our main focus is arable, but we see that all the special crops, so that's what we call them, special crops. So it's salads, apples, berries, potatoes, carrots, whatever, onions, that where you have controlled situations, have very good results as well, because they have the ability to add water if it's necessary. So in that terms, within arable, you can monitor the rain comes, it comes, it doesn't, but in that terms, you can still see the whole season's overview and how is this acting in the soil. But the results are really good. We see customers saving hundreds of thousands of euros, then based on winter crop sowing, save 50,000 euros. Then in one onion field in Finland, guy reduced his nitrogen by 80%, like seriously 80%. He, instead of 140, he used 40 kilos. And the yield was the same, because the data showed that when he irrigated, there's still unused nutrients in the soil, the number rise. And while the number didn't rise anymore at the end of the season, the growth stage, were it, at the stage that it was just to do ripening, it wasn't supposed to have any additional nutrients. And the preservance of the, or the quality or the preservance of the product was actually better, because we have seen problems in different crops where if you have excessive amount of nutrients available by the end of the season, then the plant uptakes it and it doesn't preserve as well as, or the quality of the crop is not as good as it's supposed to be.
Now, these are on test, on trial in the UK. Any idea when they might be available commercially?
Yeah, they are, They actually are available already. We have over 20 sites. We have over 10 paying customers as well, and we are now actually in the midst of sales cycle, or the sales process is ongoing. So it is available. So if there's any interest, then yeah, just contact us through our webpage, and then we can set a free demo on site. We can come on site, just show how the system works, how it is, and then discuss from there. And it's no strings attached to that.
Okay. Now, you said that people are saving a lot of money, but obviously there's a cost to this. How much does one of these cost?
Let's say the starting price is at £300 per two stations. So it's a set of two stations and it's a monthly cost, and it has maintenance in it and plus one-off installation fee as well. So,
Okay, lovely. Now, where could we go for more information? If a farmer listening to this is interested in knowing more, where should they head?
They should head to paul-tech.com, and this is where you can find all the information. You can book an online demo through there, or if you want an on-site demo, you can book it from there as well. So we will come to you and talk to you about this personally.
All right, Mick. Thank you very much for joining us on the Farming Programme. Fascinating stuff. Thank you, Mick.
Okay, thank you very much.
The Farming Programme. Market
reports. Starting with livestock from Masons Rural at Louth Market. Good morning, auctioneer Ed Middleton.
Good morning, Steve. This week, prime heifers all in average 266.58 pence per kilo. Prime steers all in average 280.63 pence per kilo. And prime bulls all in average 269.5 pence per kilo. Top price in the steers this week were JNS Brooks of Strubby at £1,948.20, and in the pence per kilo were JC Scully of Bournemouth at 304.5 pence per kilo. In the heifers, J.E. Thilby of Kexby topped at £1,643.95, and in the pence per kilo, R. Ray and Sons of Lincoln at 296.5 pence per kilo. Moving on to store cattle this week, steers all in average £1,151.48, and the heifers all in average £1,061.05. Top price in the steers were R.C. Ellis and Son of Hibblestow at £1,730. And again in the heifers were R.C. Ellis and Son of Hibblestow at £1,310. Moving on to the sheep, starting off with the spring lambs with an SQQ this week of 422.68 pence per kilo and an all-in average pounds per head of £182.71. Top price were T&J Battersby of Lincoln, £222 or 444 pence per kilo. Moving on to the hogs this week, an SQQ of 374.2 pence per kilo and an all-in average pounds per head of 170.82. Top price this week were C.S. Noble of Louth at £220, and in the pence per kilo were Woolhall Investments Limited of Spalding, soaring to 408 pence per kilo. Moving on to the cull ewes, an average this week of £129.50, with a top price from R.H. Holmes Partnership of Ragby at a super £250 for an excellent Texel ewe, with another pen from the same good home at £218. Also, last Monday we had a show and sale of ewe and lamb outfits. The wholesale averaged £105.58 per life. A top price on the day came from R.J. Bett of Louth for a pedigree blue Texel ewe with a tup lamb at foot, which sold for £548, which is £274 per life. I'm Edward Middleton, auctioneer at Louth Livestock Market.
Thanks, Ed. And how are the grain markets performed this week? Open Fields' Kit Dickinson. Morning, Kit.
Good morning, Steve. We are now in the throes of a weather market which is trading sensitively to the forecast updates in the major production areas. Ongoing dryness in southern Russia has been exacerbated by reports of frost damage, with three regions declaring a state of emergency. It is perhaps too early to quantify how much damage may have been done, but the market is nervous and reactive to the headline. Eastern Ukraine is also dry, which could reduce their surplus following last week's report that their wheat and maize exports will be down by 25% on production prospects. Ukrainian stocks have also been drawn down following their aggressive 23-24 export campaign. US winter wheat areas in the plains need rain, whilst there is some in the forecast it will need to verify. France continues to get unneeded rains, which is not helping their winter wheat crop, but also delaying their maize plantings. The US Midwest has seen torrential rains, which have been delaying maize planting, although history tells us they can catch up quickly if the rain abates. Brazil is in a mess with heat and dryness in northern and central regions, whilst the south has been hit by catastrophic flooding, which can only damage crops, but also warehouses housing grain and oilseed stocks. Australia has had rain in the east, but is still very dry in the west, whilst Indian temperatures remain above average with fresh talks of potential wheat imports. Argentine maize are also being written down due to the leafhopper beetle damage. So looking at barley this week, premiums are still historically high as the grain complex has risen and the maltster has remained absent from the market. On paper, there is an ample supply. Feed barley has risen in line with wheat. However, buyers remain reluctant in the current discounts and the UK will have a surplus to ship. The discount has to be pushed out to find export demand, meaning malting premiums will firm and they should be taken advantage of. We are now looking for the ideal run into harvest for the crop to realise anywhere near its trend yields, with reports that some crops are trying to compensate for late planting dates. Buyers and sellers are reluctant to engage, leading to a standoff. Values are currently unchanged on the week. Oilseed rape, it's been a strong week for rapeseed, with the August contract rallying to over €485 a tonne. Supporting the market recently has been concerns around the lower winter rapeseed acreage planted in the EU and weather conditions that could have negatively affected the crop. Strategy Grains predict that there will be a 9% fall across EU crops from 23, and closer to home, the AHDB early survey have put the UK area down by 28% year on year. There have also been concerns that after early flowering, the cold, the wet, the windy conditions have kept the bees and the insects away from the crops. Reports show that whilst oilseed rape is considered to be a self-pollinating plant, insect pollination is important to further increase the yield and indeed the quality of the crop. And beans, old crop beans are quiet with prices firming as supply tightens up. Over the past few weeks, some new crop have been trading at significant premiums over the November wheat futures, although consumers are reluctant to hold this premium as the wheat prices are beginning to increase. So looking at wheat prices this week, June 187 to 197, July 193 to 203, August new crop off the combine 190 to 204, November 210 to 220, February 214 to 224, and May 25, 217 to 227. Milling wheat premiums for new crop are currently circa £60. Feed barley for June 161 to 171, moving into July and August off the combine 164 to 174, November 180 to 190, February 183 to 193, and May 25, 186 to 196. For malting premiums, please do speak to your open field farm business manager. And lastly, oilseed rape for June 385 to 395, November 400 to 410, May 406 to 416.
Thanks, Kit. Now, before we look at the weather for this week, next week sees another brilliant charity tractor run in Lincolnshire, run by Louth Lions, from where comes organiser Lindy Rack. Good morning, Lindy. Tell us what's happening next Sunday, then.
Good morning. Yes, so we are leaving from Peacock and Binnington's at around 10 o'clock. The tractors will arrive there anywhere from 8:30 for registration and have a bacon bun. And then we're going to travel through Fotherby, Aldingham, North Cockrington and Manby, and then on into Louth to arrive at the livestock market around 12:30, where they'll be able to get jacket potatoes and there'll be a raffle and have a drink. They'll probably need it if it's warm like this.
Yeah, fingers crossed, definitely. And it's always a great sight to see, isn't it, for spectators?
It is. Yeah, yeah. Lots and lots of vintage tractors. We get the odd new one. We're actually hoping for the Lincolnshire Rural Support Network. They've asked if they can bring their liveried up tractor. So we're hoping that they might be able to lead the procession through town.
That would be great in their 25th anniversary year. Why are you doing this, Lindy?
Louth Lions do lots of charity events throughout the year. And we raise money and then that money is distributed to groups, charities, projects that are going on in the local community.
So this stays in the local area then, the money you raise?
It does, yeah.
Brilliant. Yeah. So where should we go if we're interested in either taking part or spectating? Where can we find out more information?
So there's posts on Facebook and on Instagram. I have a page called Tractor Runs in Lincolnshire. It's on there as well.
Would you rather people, if they wanted to take part, register in advance, or is it okay just to turn up on the day?
It's good if they register in advance. We know we've got people coming. It saves them a little bit of time on the morning. But no, registering on the day is absolutely fine. Some people like to see what the weather's going to be like.
All right, Lindy. Well, I wish you a very successful Louth Lions track to run next Sunday. Hope loads of people turn up, and fingers crossed for the weather.
Lovely. Thank you very much.
The Farming Programme. 5-day forecast.
Low pressure brings some unsettled weather this week, with rain most days, gusty, mostly southerly winds, not much sun, and daytime highs in the mid to upper teens Celsius. Now, don't forget the Lincolnshire Young Farmers Rally is at Sturton Estates at Bournemouth near Horncastle on Saturday, with kind sponsorship from Ireland's Farm Machinery in association with Stewart's Trailers and Kubota. Hope to see you there. There's all you need to know on the Lincolnshire Young Farmers Club's Facebook page. More from the Week in Agriculture, same time next week. I'm Steve Orchard. Until then, have a great week.
The Farming Programme with Araquip Steel Stockholders, Withambrook Industrial Estate Grantham. BSI ISO 9001 accredited.